Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Angry music, reserved for angry people. Now, they'll both deny that they're angry, but let me ask Tim Lynch, do other people think you're an angry person?
Yeah, sometimes. It's apparently something to do with the visage, my normal, whatever my resting face is.
Right.
It often is mistaken for hostility, and right. I'm the nicest guy in the world. It's very, very bizarre.
It's odd, isn't it? We'll ask Jeff Kenny the same thing. Jeff, do people think you're an angry person, even though the rest of us know that you're not?
Believe it or not, they do. I have the same resting bitch face problem that Tim has. And sometimes I illuminate myself because I go from that into being a person filled with ridicule and disdain and unfair criticism. So I'm just a all-around fun guy to be around.
And the beautiful thing about Jeff is Jeff goes from 0 to 60 in like 0.0 seconds. Right. He can
I'm getting old, man. I'm slowing down. It's like 0.5 seconds now.
Most of us could do it pretty quick. Jeff is quicker than all of us. He can go angry. But yeah. But we would deny, every one of us denies it though. What? Like, I'm not angry. That's what do you expect me to greet stupidity with? Happiness?
Yeah, really.
So, I mean, I look at myself as a victim in those search words. I didn't go looking for this. It found me. What do you want me to do? Sit here and like be a bobblehead? I don't have bobblehead in me.
Right.
So,
I mean, even when you kind of agree with the person who's talking, sometimes just the way they're saying it makes you want to be, you know, be like a dick to them, you know? What do you think of that, Jeff? I think you suck. I mean, I don't know what to say. You know?
I agree with you, but, you know, the way you presented it and then that point, yeah, I mean, you suck. You really aren't very good at this. Right? And you're like, really? Did we have to play that card? Yes! It's the card I play with my best friends. Do you want me to be honest with you, or do you want me to sit here with my hands in my lap?
Nobody ever accused us of being boring. That's for sure.
You can always tell a guy like that when you're in the movies, like you're watching Goodfellas. The guy who is still laughing after 10 minutes, after Joe Pesci says, the guy says to Joe Pesci, the cop, "Are you going to tell me something today, buddy? Okay, I'll tell you something. Go fuck your mother." And then the guy who's still laughing at that after 10 minutes, he's an angry guy.
All right, let's talk about – I want to talk about Afghanistan. Afghanistan back in the news, Bagram rocketed. In my head, I have the article, How We Lost the High-Tech War of 2007. And I have some of those things in my head about, the Americans, you know, they thought their high tech was going to, they didn't understand who they were dealing with. They didn't understand our fury. They didn't understand our willingness to die.
Right.
And now we can smell it. They want out and we need to kill them, and they'll run out of here like they've run out of everywhere else. So,
great article, by the way.
I'll tell you what, I'll include it with this. But again, it was written 14 years ago, but you'll find it really, really interesting, I think, and illuminating in many ways. And as Jeff said in a conversation three of us had offline, you know, you still see people refer to this article, low, you know, 14 years later, in discussions about enemies around the world. But Timmy, your thoughts on Afghanistan? I used to quote Grant Newsham saying, "I'm cautiously pessimistic." I've removed the term cautiously from that phrase, and I'm just straight up pessimistic now.
Oh, yeah. And you have every reason to be. Now, that rocket attack on Bagram, allegedly, the Taliban have said they had nothing to do with it. ISIS-K, the remnants of thereof, claim that they did it. So who knows? That's interesting. The Afghans did, in fact, the special forces guys, they captured the head of ISIS-K in Afghanistan, and the Taliban is demanding he be turned over to them so he can be tried and executed appropriately. So that's interesting, right? So I don't know what the hell is going on in Afghanistan. But when Pompeo says, hey, man, I'll pull everybody out and cut the money off, I take him at his word. And I didn't want to see it end that way. But I think it's going to, because the nonsense isn't going to stop there.
Well, and I'll tell you what, one other thing is now there's going to be fiscal pressure based on all the money that's going to have to be given out here domestically.
Yeah.
We're going to need to claw that back someplace.
Us and everybody else as we go through this COVID-19 pandemic disaster on our economies. So it's not going to be just us who are going to be a little light on the purse. It's going to be all the other collaborating countries. And like I said, Japan and Germany have thrown massive amounts of money in there. China throws a little bit of money in there. They're probably going to start throwing more. But all those countries are going to have to reconcile with the economic damage once we determine what that damage is.
Well, yeah. And the next question, Tim, from what you just said, which is all true, is what's the one country in the world that's not doing self-surgery on their own economies in order to deal with this coronavirus thing? And it's the Chinese, where the thing came from. China economy is doing just like they always did. The only problem they might have is the fact that most people can't buy their stuff now. But they're humming along.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. That's going to be, you know, they're now want to go back to work. But, yeah. You know, like I saw a report this morning about farmers saying, you know, a guy says, look, I have a whole strawberry crop, a guy in Georgia.
Yeah, I saw that.
Right? I have a whole strawberry crop in Georgia, and I can't take it out of the field. And a farmer, milk producer, said I just dumped 24,000 gallons of milk because there's no demand for it because schools are out.
And restaurants. Right. And absolutely right, yeah.
Right. Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, this is going to hurt. And so, yeah, there's going to be a lot of reconciling going on. I think as all this plays out, you're going to find us out of Afghanistan, though.
Well, you know what makes me think is what's the think tank like? We kind of hit on in some of our texts back and forth. How are they discussing these COAs? Not just for like what we talk about, you know, the future of the Marine Corps, but like what they're doing with this Corona thing. Is there any imagination? Is there any like okay, we don't want to do this because it's committing suicide. I mean, if you ask people who were born in 1900, when they're still alive in the 60s and 70s, my grandparents, right? What is worse in your memory, the Spanish flu or the Great Depression? All of them will say the Great Depression, even though they lived through both. And the reason is because, you know, it's a misery with unforeseen, effects in all different ways. I mean, everything from crime to fucking education to your military ability to protect your interests overseas is all affected. Huge.
For an unknown amount of time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was listening to President talk a couple of days ago, and he said, our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have cost the United States $9 trillion.
Right.
Can you imagine that? I mean, mm-hmm. Now I looked up. I did some research on the internet and the internet, and I did it on the internet and the intercept, both of them, and they put the number close to $7 trillion. So split the difference and say $8 trillion, and at the end of it, what are we going to get out of it? Nothing.
We'll be lucky to get nothing. We'll be lucky if we don't get a black eye on the way out.
Yeah. I mean, think about that. $8 trillion. I mean, if there's not a lesson in that for future, right, for future Don Rumsfelds and Robert McNamara's and all their asshole fucking buddies, mm-hmm. You know, to, hey, look, don't fight optional wars, right? Go in, send everybody into Tora Bora, right? Everybody, and get that done with yesterday and fucking leave. And look at them when you're walking out of the door and say, if you fuck this up again, we're coming back in here and we're just going to level shit. We have no interest in being here and we're not going to have any programs for you. We're just going to fuck you up.
Yeah, it's like there's no rigor applied. Like when we're talking about the Afghans and the Iraqis, we're not saying, okay, what is the thing we're going to do that is a measure of success for us? And the measure of success is it's just like a college. I mean, a college that really cares about teaching people things. You start with a high school graduate who is smart enough to get a certain level on the school, you know, scholastic aptitude test. And then from there, you can take him and move him further. And it's a rigor. And if he doesn't apply enough rigor, he will fail. He will flunk out. Yet there's no rigor applied to these people that they got to do it themselves. And that's like that's a key part of developing someone is their will to succeed with your help. And if they don't have that or they're not commensurate, it's destined for failure. And if you keep throwing money at it, because in America, people who work for the government, to them, it's disgusting. Money is no object to somebody in the State Department or in the military. I mean, I've seen some of these advisor guys out there acting like, oh, yeah, we can give you this. We can give you that. I'm like, you're giving away something that your mom and dad from, Podunk, Ohio are part of. You know, they're giving up fucking taxes for this. Have a little respect for this money. But they don't. We don't, as services and government workers don't have it. That's how you end up with $7 trillion in the hole.
Can you imagine that? $7 trillion that could have been spent on infrastructure. I mean, name what you could have dumped it nationally.
Hey, there's one point about that large sum of money is that most of it never left the country because they're doling those things out in large grants. So like you build in the embassy or what have you. So most of 50 to 60% of that money was overhead for the large international corporations, because I worked for them. I know to administer those funds, because the one thing the state and USAID does not want to do is parcel out little piddly 2 million, 3 million here and there. They like 30, 40, 50 million chunks. And that's exactly what they did. So
I want to go back to Jeff's question, because I think it's an interesting question. And I was thinking about it. So as the dust settles with this, and as the nations around the world collectively look at China and say, you know, if this had happened in Canada and they had been transparent and, you know, and that, but that's where this started and this went around the world, like the Spanish flu, you know, we wouldn't have any cause or any desire to seek any kind of compensation from Canada because, you know, they were transparent. They shared all their information.
Right.
But you son of a bitches, right? This thing could have been contained in your country or probably regionally with a very small price by the rest of the world if you had been honest. And as soon as the first healthcare workers that were treating these people got sick, you fucking knew that it was transmittable, you know, human to human. As soon as that happened, and it did, and you didn't do anything to warn the world, and you had the dancing chicken, right? The World Health Organization, right? Parroting that shit. But so.
Yeah, you know, there's two examples.
Hold on. Here's the question. The question is, what should we exact from China? Or what should we strategically craft to say, China, you now have to do what? You know, in either this is where our relationship's going, this is where the world's relationship is going with you. You no longer have special status in the World Trade Organization and all that bullshit. You know, I mean, so strategically, you know, on the backside of the coronavirus, how should the United States use this incident to position itself vis-a-vis China?
Yeah, you know, my wife read an article about Japan spending billions of dollars to pull their stuff. Any kind of like, manufacturing stuff that they're having done in China to re-wicker to pull it out. So, I mean, in doing that, China's going to get alarmed, especially if we were to do it. Right. We should do it. Right. But, I mean, that's the stick. And I don't know what the carrot, I guess, is not doing it. You know, but that's one way, I think, you know, that we should absolutely. Our pharmaceuticals, some of our military stuff that we totally depend on them for. And this is a communist. This is Red China. The guys who like, you know, almost overran Captain Barber, and Fox 27. You know what the fuck, man? What are we thinking?
Well, I'll tell you what, and it won't be just the United States doing that. Every nation around the world is going to look at what they don't produce domestically and say, you know what, we've got to incentivize production of that here in our country for obvious national security reasons.
And what you said about that astounding amount of money. There's two countries where we did it right. And I don't know if we did it right on purpose or whatever, or is, you know, internal U.S. politics like it usually is. But South Korea and Israel. I mean, South Korea we poured a lot of money into, but Israel, not so much. Matter of fact, I was astounded when I looked into it. We didn't really start backing them up in a big way until the 1973 war. They were like reworking old Shermans. That was their main battle tank, you know, in the 67 Blitz they did in 6 days.
And, you know, the pisser of all that is by the time, right, the Jews rework a Sherman tank, it's whacking our main battle tanks.
Yeah, yeah. that's, no shit. It's like knocking out French tanks on the Golan Heights and stuff. Yeah.
They did it with what, the F they made modifications to, like, even the F-16, where we were, like, spending millions of dollars. They were putting up, like, rearview mirrors out of cars in their F-16s and saying, yeah, we've used this to be able to do this. And you know, the F-16, I mean, the Israelis have, like, taken that thing and, you know, made it, like, the invincible. I mean, what, I think the first one that's ever been shot down or something like that was shot down, what, in the last year in Syria?
Yeah, it's like, because the rhetoric we say about what our military does for our country, it's not rhetoric for the Israelis. It's the truth. But for us, I mean, sometimes I think some of these changes that are coming about in the Marine Corps and some have, that have happened earlier have been about big corporations and making high-tech stuff.
Don't go Smedley Butler on us.
Yeah, I won't. And that's the other thing about that lion bastard. He didn't go that way until he knew he wasn't going to be coming up. You know, we were talking about military guys who speak up. He didn't speak up until after he knew that he was tits up, as the Navy says, as far as going any further, you know?
Timmy?
Well,
strategic question about China. What do we on the backside of this? What do we? How do we angle this?
Well, we've got to sort out our supply chains and bring a lot of our industrial capacity back inside of our own shores. There was a time when we produced the majority of the IV fluid containers for the world, but that was in Puerto Rico, and after that got hit by a hurricane, they relocated to China. So that has to come back. We get a lot of our drugs, our generic drugs, from India, but all the precursors they use to make drugs come from China. So that's got to change. I think it's a matter of national security as far as that goes. So as we start pulling stuff back, we've got a lot of concessions we're going to ask of China. I don't know what they are, but what we should, the end state should be us in a very favorable trading position in China, and China no longer having aspirations of global hegemony and expansion, because right now they've got to deal with an awful lot of fallout, and we don't even know how bad that's going to be.
Yep. That might be the Chinese version of the way, you know, the Iranians are always causing trouble because it's the only way they can keep their people unified. The whole thing about it, we're going to run the whole show, might be the only way they think they can keep their people unified. And maybe they shouldn't be unified. You know, I mean, there's like probably 8 different countries within what China calls China, you know?
Well, and you know, the primary purpose of the Chinese military is domestic suppression. It's not international events. Yeah. All right. You guys probably have transitioned before, but officially the program is not cautiously pessimistic about Afghanistan. It is straight up pessimistic about what we're going to get for whatever percentage of the 7 million and the seven trillion. That's U.S. funds. I mean, what do you think the world has dumped into that shithole?
Yeah, double
it easy.
Nice.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the subject of the week, the Crozier Modley affair. Give us thoughts, Jeff.
Well, you know, the whole idea of the Secretary of the Navy firing an 06 in any service, you know, either the Marine Corps or the Navy, is just an anathema to me, because all levels between those two guys. I mean, there's at least 4.
Did you just say an anathema?
Yes.
How can you go from tits up to anathema?
It's a talent that has impressive. To be developed. I once went up with a girl who was tits up, and her name was Anathema.
That's why the word association.
Didn't end well. But all right, no more. I won't be pretentious anymore. I'll speak as if I'm speaking to you guys.
Yes, okay? Thank you.
Anyway. I fucking forgot what I was going to say. Oh, yeah. So there's like 4, the chain of command's got, like, you know, there's the fleet admiral. Then there's there's a couple more, and then there's finally there's a CNO. You know, what do those guys think? I mean, because it kind of like there's got to be some kind of discussion between the SecNav and these folks. Some of these folks, you'd assume at least the CNO, and the CNO, if he says I don't agree with you, well then what? Does the SecNav still go ahead? I mean, does he consider himself to be an admiral, or he's just a civilian guy that another civilian guy appointed to that job, and this one didn't even get cleared by the. He wasn't confirmed as the Secretary of Navy. He's confirmed for his, lower job. But and the other thing is, on the other hand, though, this captain of the ship, the captain, he's basically mouthing off, saying stuff open source that would probably give aid and comfort to our adversaries. So he just, he ain't like a hero in this thing. It's like
on top of that, one of those guys, either he. Or I think it's Strike Group 3 or 9, whichever one it is. I mean, who made the great decision that – because half the Navy's coronavirus cases are on the Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. And I probably if you look at the other vessels in the Strike Group, right, if you count them up, more than half are from that Liberty, Who said – who thought – and they went in I want to say March 4th they were there. So who thought that was a good idea? The thing's been going on in China for fucking going into the third month at that point.
No shit. And listen to this. Can you imagine if Colonel Lowndes, 26 Marines and Kaysan said, hey, I'm getting hammered every day by, 122s and all kind of artillery and, no one's really helping me. I mean, General Tompkins and General Westmoreland and – They would have been following themselves to fire them before the SecDef could, or the SecNav could, or they'd say, at least let those guys have a chance to deal with their own subordinate issue.
Dude, that one never makes it out of the regiment. You did what? Your shit's fired right yesterday. Because I know if I don't do that right, my ass might get fired.
That's it. That's exactly it. Like the Gambino family. If you don't whack Joe, I'm going to whack you.
Right. It's like, he did what? Oh, hell, not only no, but hell no. To me.
Obviously, neither Crozier nor the SecNav were ever on recruiting duty. Otherwise, they would have understood it right away.
Timmy, your thoughts? Your thoughts? And then we might do a little role playing here, okay?
Ooh, okay. Well, first off, I that captain.
Well, hold on. Out, as the only veteran in the United States Navy amongst us, Tim Lynch.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. Here's what Doc Lynch has to say about that. No, the ship's captain relieved himself when he hit send on that email, as you've correctly pointed out. That's not even debatable. The acting Navy Secretary's reaction, I can understand it because it was an appalling public display of insubordination by both the captain and the crew, but he went racing off with his hair on fire, and that was again weird. But what's really weird to me is what did the captain hope to achieve? Because I've been on a ship, LPH-9, the Guam Ball, when we had, I think it was at least two at a time, typhoid patients, Marines, artillerymen from the shore in Beirut. I mean, these guys were 105 degree temps. And seizures, positive blood cultures, they weren't going anywhere because they wouldn't survive the trip. So you just put them in isolation. You rode it out until they got better. And he had no crewmen that were critically ill. I don't understand what he's thinking. And I think this is something to do with the same movie, two different screens people are watching. I would suspect this captain is thinking along the hashtag resistance. This is again the incompetent.
You're gonna play the hashtag resistance card in this.
Yeah. And then the Secretary of Navy comes in and trumps him. And trumps him. And they're both of them wrong. They're both of them wrong because they're both of them operating out on the fringes. Because my question to that captain is, what the hell are they doing to get guys like him in command? He doesn't know how to handle 10 sick crewmen. Get the hell out of here. I mean, I've dealt with that stuff on ships before, and that's not how we handle
now here's
it.
Let me say one thing. You got to let me say this, and you'll be glad you did.
How do we prevent you?
Well, you can, I guess. But two substandard guys put in bass relief by the coronavirus crisis.
Okay, hold on, hold on. Hold on. Once again, explain what bas relief is, because I know, because I had to take fucking art history for an entire year at the University of San Diego. Explain to everybody what bas relief is.
Bas relief is like a fresco or a image that comes out of the surface that it's on, so it's almost partially like a statue. I mean, that's what I understand it as. And I hope that's what it is. I'll be pretty embarrassed. I've thrown that word around.
It's like it's like a painting, but it's made out of stone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So
it actually has relief to it.
Yeah.
Because there's it's not flat, you know. Right. And and that's how these two guys will now. The other way of saying it is they'll stick out like a dog's ball as jerk offs, you know. And but now they're
so you could take either relief. You could take either one of those, you know, visual descriptions, bas relief, yeah, or sticking out like a dog's balls. Either right. Whichever one that helps you get through this.
Yes.
Well said, sir.
So wait a minute.
The Greeks used to make bas relief images of guys with balls sticking out. Let's not get off the topic.
So wait a minute. So two subpar guys. So to me, what's interesting is the captain or somebody or the strike group who makes the decision that says, yeah, we're going to go on Libo in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Then that fucking disaster starts moving across the Pacific towards Guam, and then they double down on a shit decision, right? And he hits send on an email. I mean, these guys are like in my opinion, like the Gong Show.
Yeah,
right?
Lot of this stuff is influenced by State Department too. Movements the Navy makes, you know, and visits, port visits they make.
We can't get off the ship,
right? Right?
You mean, sir, we're going to be in port and we're going to stay on the ship? We have to. There's a fucking plague going on across the border. We don't think it's here, right? I mean, come on, sir. Come on, you got to let the crew off the ship. You have to. No, I don't. Oh, you know, everybody's going to think you're an asshole. Okay, all right, that's it. Let them off the ship, right? So what was the other thing I was going to say? Silence, though, from strike group, flag,
yeah, Seventh
Fleet, Navy, Pacific Command, Indo-Pacific Command, and the CNO. Crickets, Bueller, anybody? Somebody got something to say? I mean, come on. Once we decide he's going to be relieved, you know, Jeff, you be strike group 3. Timmy, you be the Seventh Fleet. And I'll be Navy Pacific Command, right? And so we're in a conference call. I'm Navy Pacific Command. That means I'm the 3-star. And so I get you two jerk-offs on the phone, and I say, what the fuck is going on down there, right? And Timmy, you're 7th Fleet, and what do you say?
I'm not sure, but I've got people on the way. I'm going to get that guy's scalp and bring it back to the headquarters, and I'll tell you after I talk to him.
Right. I like that. But see, if you were smart, you would have said, I don't fucking know. Admiral Kinney knows, though. Right?
That's right. We're Navy admirals. I'm sorry. Well, I would say consult with my colleague, Admiral Kinney. He's well informed of things that happen at the deck plate, don't you know?
Of all things in Strike Group 3 or 9, whatever the fuck it is. Admiral Kinney, can you explain this to us?
I'd say, I just do what I'm told. I search for... I do it the lowest civilian in my chain of command tells me to do. I take the directions I get from my uniform superiors, which in the traditional old-fashioned days, whose word was law. I just kind of take that as, you know, advice. But the ones who I obey without question are the civilian appointees, you know, who've been who are lord over my service, in this case the Navy.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, it's dangerous to be a Secretary of the Navy because you could go any day.
or acting. Okay. All right, boys. Look, we all know, you know, his ass has to be fired. Okay?
Yeah.
All right, but this is going to be a shit burger for whoever does it. Who wants to do it?
See, I'm a volunteer type guy.
I would volunteer Admiral Kinney. He's actually physically closer to the incident site.
And here's the thing.
I agree.
Here's the reason why.
Hey, this is 7th Fleet. I agree. This should be done in person.
Yeah. Here's what I think why it didn't happen. because of what you were saying, Mac, about who's the dumbass who says, yeah, go in there and go on Lipo and, you know, in Hong Kong and all these other ports in China. Yeah, go ahead and do it. Don't worry about it.
Well,
I'm ordering you to do it.
Yeah, that's Strike Group 3, and maybe the 7th Fleet guy approved it too.
Yeah, and then that's move two. That's when Crozier really embeds himself down into, you know, Benedict Arnold land. That's when he says, these guys, you know, they ordered me to go ahead and go on Libo there.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, I want to go to the Philippines. Worst thing I had to worry about there is enough penicillin, you know, but no, they wanted to send me to China, you know, so I had to go.
All right, so the next thing is Maudley. He loses his mind, right? So Maudley, but if what some of the stuff he says is true, right, and to what Jeff says, here's the Secretary of the Navy talking to a colonel.
Yeah.
Right? And then he says, the colonel says, I got everything I need. I was worried a couple of days ago, but everything's tracking now. And then the next thing that happens is then he publishes the letter. So, like, what the fuck? You're talking to the Secretary of the Navy? And you like you lose your mind?
That's where you start getting into the you go over to the fringes of the how this guy is perceiving the government. I mean, there's a lot of people who think that President Trump is illegitimate. Is a monster.
So we're gonna play
this guy's like that. What's his name? Lieutenant Colonel Vintage or what was his name?
Vinter.
From
Ukrainian.
From that.
Hey, that guy was outed as a chow thief, man. He scammed some chow during Mountain Phase and didn't even share it with anybody else in his class. So that's all you need to know about
that. That's bullshit. Yeah.
I think he was hiding chow from the people in Congress. You know what I mean?
So what did you think of the Maudley speech? Okay, we all know he shouldn't have done it, but what did you think of the speech overall?
Made him sound like he was on active duty. That rubbed me the wrong way. Although many things rub me the wrong way. Maybe I'm not the one who should be the judge, you know. But, I mean, I think I would have had the Sermon on the Mount. I probably would have been picking scabs off that, you know. So I might not be the right guy to ask. I liked the Gettysburg Address. Most other speeches, I don't know.
Leave me cold. Timmy, your thoughts.
Hey, well, I knew how he felt when he was done with that speech. I didn't have any real problem with it other than he shouldn't have flown out there and gave it in person.
That's what the fleet admiral should have said. He was pissed,
that's for sure.
Right.
That's what the 7th Fleet guy should have said.
Yeah.
I was going to do that, but I – Admiral Kennedy took care of that unpleasantness.
Was on the scene. You know, and then again, still to this day, nothing from any of them to include the CNO. So the CNO saying anything, if we got our secret decoder rings out, does that mean that the CNO, he thought it was bullshit from the start? And so I'm just going to stand here, you know, nothing to see here, boys, with my hands in my lap, and I'm just going to watch it go. My silence speaks, you know, for me.
Yeah, really. He's like, he's taking a vow of silence. That's. All the surface chiefs have a vow of silence.
Yeah, it's
he's not only taking a vow of silence. He's been silent about a lot of things, which is a good segue into what the Commandant's been up to, because I haven't heard him talking about that either.
Well, I'll tell you the other thing to remember about Maudley is he was a 2-star. They disrespected every 4-star in the Navy and every 3-star after Moran got thrown out. And they said, we're going to reach down into the pile and we're going to grab a fledgling superstar. And the rest of you schleps, sorry, maybe in another lifetime you might aspire to this. But
wow, is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's a 2-star. I mean, think about that. 2-star in the Navy. They reached all the way down in this 2-star pile and yanked him up to be the commandant of the Navy. Yeah, I know. Pretty amazing. But
although my recommendation is they make Bronzy the next commandant of the Marine Corps.
Chris Bronzy. I'm sure he'll be happy you said that. The What was the other thing I was going to say about all this? Jim Imhoff. Inhofe, the ranking
senator.
Yeah, the ranking senator from Oklahoma, I think, mm-hmm. you know, said that he was very dismayed at what he's seen in the last year in the upper leadership of the United States Navy. And, man, Navy, I mean, they can't get out of there. It seems like they can't get out of their own way whenever right. anything happens. I mean, it's just – it's like, okay, this is bad. But we could always make it fucking worse, right, boys? Yeah, we can. Yeah, we can. Let's get on this shit. Let's make it worse, right? Let's comment about court martials as the CNO, so the whole fucking thing can get thrown out. You know
that they're talking about, but this they're not saying shit about.
Well, they've learned for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Right. The it only takes me four times to learn it, and then after that, I'm good. You know, but it's been amazing. It's been amazing. The let's talk about the burger plan. I'm sure, like you, like me, both of you have people emailing you things to read and articles and stuff like that. As you guys kind of live your lives and you're associated with this discussion. Talk to me about anything you've seen or read that has impacted the framework that we've kind of developed relative to evaluating this plan for the future of the Marine Corps.
Well, I've seen exactly nothing that adds anything to the plus side. I've sure received a lot of traffic that is on the negative side.
Would you care to elaborate? Timothy?
Yeah, I'll give you I'll read one. This is a typical email of the emails I've gotten. Name of course will not be mentioned. Retired infantry officer, okay? In full agreement, period. The MAGTF can operate in international waters. It takes host country permission to put your stuff on their turf. Does anyone seriously believe you can sneak around a foreign country undetected and resupply in a local grocery store or gas station? Then acquire targets in the open ocean, sink their ships, and scoot away and hide until ready for the next go at it? The entire premise of this document is so seriously flawed as to be a work of delusional neophytes. Yep, I said it, delusional. This is not a strategy. It is a juvenile fantasy. The logistics alone are impossible, as is the premise of the communication requirements. These units will be hunted down and exterminated piecemeal. There is not a single piece to this that can stand up to scrutiny. Reading the document doesn't even make me angry. It is too foolish to even be taken seriously. Imagine for a moment that a current MEF commander decided to put 15 recon teams 250 miles in front of the float and made no logistical provisions for resupply, air supply, extraction, or armed with pistols and without radios that can operate at that range. That was his comment. That's typical. That's actually a very
nice. He sounds like a smart fella.
Can you explain what a FLOT is?
A forward line of troops. Basically, in 250 miles deep in front of your friendly forces.
Got it. All right. Just so everybody knows, that's what that is. And so that would be typical of the input you've received from people?
That would be one of the more mild ones, yes.
I sent you an article, Mac. We'll talk about a little bit by this Lieutenant Commander Roscoe in proceedings that I got from a former Marine who works as a contractor for the MEF, and it dovetailed with what General Berger was saying. But the kid's knowledge, and I guess the kid, I mean he's probably in his 40s, but the knowledge of history and the stuff he based on was like an inch deep. And that's the problem with this. It's like they say, well, you know, the ARG-MU concept is outdated. It was something for the 80s when, and the idea of three ships. Well, the first thing is you should get your facts straight. The ARG-MU that we had in the 80s and even into the 90s was five ships. And then and the idea was, you know, you'd be able to do a couple different things. Number one, show the flag. A lot of times the United States hoving to, as they say, you know, over the, you know, on the near side of the horizon where bad guys can see it, cools a lot of stuff down. And then because of the the chaos the world was thrown in when the Soviet Union collapsed, in regards to, you know, there's no longer another center of gravity. There's all these countries that came apart the seams and endangered our diplomatic people who needed to be evacuated. I mean, at least half a dozen instances that happened. And then recently, the fact that we didn't use the ARGMU, like, for instance, in Benghazi in 2012, doesn't mean that the ARGMU is outdated. It means it was maldeployed. They broke the ARGMU up and had a couple ships in the Med and a preponderance of ships from both the East Coast and the West Coast MUs in the Gulf. They had another one supporting operations of the Saudis against the Houthi rebels in Yemen and stuff. So they were basically made to be ineffective. If you had taken a pretty good, chunk of that MU and rolled them in there on Benghazi, you know, during that time, I think you'd still have an Ambassador Stevens walking around. And so, that's the first thing, is when you all agree on a flawed piece of history, then any kind of bad decisions can follow. Oh, if we had guys there, just think. I mean, how would you have averted those catastrophes with this truncated Marine Corps that's being pushed? Bottom line, you wouldn't. But then again, according to this new Marine Corps, you wouldn't even be there. You'd all be in the South China Sea. But that's not the way things work. The American people expect the Marines to be there where needed. You know, send in the Marines, all that stuff. That's the first thing in everybody's mind. It was back when Teddy Roosevelt was president, and it is now with President Trump.
Yeah, I've got a relative, to the framework we kind of discussed, and I'll post that the eight kind of principles of the framework, but it's the impetus, what drives this change.
Right.
Number two is predictive failure. That whenever you look at the future, you have to keep in mind the history of those who've attempted to predict the future of warfare, and they, in no matter what nation you look at, they've been wrong most of the time. You look at what the Marine Corps stock and trade has been, and how does General Berger's decisions impact the things that we've been to the nation since World War II. You look at the historic behavior of other commandants when they've been faced with similar revolutions, right? We try to look at the way General Berger has developed this course of action. We look at our adversaries. We look at the external commitments required and the role of the reserves in making all this happen. The biggest thing that I had somebody hammer on me over the course of the last week was the way this thing has come to market. Now, people said, hey, look, I think the time for the small group is long gone.
Yeah.
And yet I have not seen any kind of debate about this in the Marine Corps. And then the point they made to me was, what kind of an organization doesn't have a vibrant intellectual discussion about a substantial change in the future? And when you look at articles that have been written about it, I mean, anything that's been written by a writer is, in my opinion, incredibly shallow and lacks any kind of substance relative to the things that we discuss. Right. And so it's almost like they're reporting that the Marine Corps is going to do something different. Boom. That's it. Okay. Hey, the Marine Corps is going back to sea. George Will, the latest, in the last, 24, 48 hours. But there isn't the substantive, discussion about the rest of the, range of military operations. There isn't a substantive discussion that says if the Navy gives you 100 of these ships, which isn't going to happen. But
they won't even give one.
So if the Navy gives you 100 of these ships that haven't been designed, that haven't been approved, that aren't even on anybody's blueprints yet, right? You can only get 10,000 Marines in there.
Yeah.
Right? And so what does everybody else do? Run in place to get ready to go? And you've got to give us and what the question Jeff brought up. So, about the logistics of all of this and about, the questions that Timmy brought up. You think that you're going to get Americans into their, area of operation where they will have, millions of Chinese that will have their special forces guys integrated in there looking for your ass? And I will tell you this.
Speak the language. Yeah.
Right. They're not going to, in my opinion, they're not going to, isolate and kill, you know, these things. I would seek, as to go back to the way we lost the high-tech war of 2007, I would capture these, you know, these Americans and then put their asses on TV, because we know the critical vulnerability of the United States. It's right through that fucking television.
Yeah.
And so to me, you know, that all got linked back to, where is the vibrant discussion about this? And it doesn't seem to be taking place.
Right.
I mean, it is here, certainly. But, I mean, I don't see a lot of it. I see, you know, General Berger has dictated the course of the Marine Corps. I don't see, you know, any retired officers writing anything. I don't see any active duty officers writing anything. I don't see any dissent or any discussion. I see majors and captains and other people, you know, writing articles, you know, about some aspect of it. But
That's it. I mean, if there was a groundswell from the retired community and saying, hey, let's kind of have a symposium about this, you know, where we come up with our experience points to this not working out very well. Both our and if you look at history, things just don't happen. I don't know the last thing that happened in the South China Sea. All the Chinese got to do to make this thing irrelevant is just don't do anything in the South China Sea and do mischief other places where we decide we're not going to be. And you know, and then what?
No, I mean, we'll go there. Our boats will be able to go there and do the same thing that we were going to do in the South China Sea. We'll be able to do the same thing. Area denial, rocket security forces. We just lost you. Timmy, thoughts?
Well, I saw an interview with the Commandant in War of the Rocks. I sent you the link on the chat box on your Facebook. This is 2 days old. And so I've read this thing. It's a long interview. The guy interviewing him, I believe, is a contemporary of my dad's. I don't recognize the name. But General Berger explains where this came from, explains that this was started prior to his arrival, explains that he enjoys the criticism because it's good. The criticism means people are talking about it. But in nowhere does he explain lucidly how the hell we're going to do this. He says, of course, we'll be able to cover all other contingencies. We absolutely can do that. And all I hear is again and again and again, we've got to be a single integrated naval force. And as far as I'm aware, the Navy hasn't even ponied up to that concept yet. I assume they have to be talking to the Marines at some point in stage, but there's nothing about this interview that leaves me with a feeling of comfort. It just makes me more distraught, and because I just cannot see how you get capabilities back that you give up. Once you give up those capabilities, they're gone. Once you lose all your machine guns, you're never getting them back. I just can't see us doing it. It breaks my heart.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. No, I continue to get peppered with different questions about this and about the discussion, and I don't have a right answer for it, and so the in the meantime, right, we're deactivating units and sending people home.
Well, he's got to talk to Congress at some point. He says so in this interview. He's got to get some, but I think he can unilaterally start doing some of that. But he said it's a 10-year process, and which gave me some hope. The other thing, which is a fact, is that whatever we perceive China as being a year ago in war games, they're not going to be that a year from now, for reasons that we've already discussed. So I think that one of the only positives from our overreaction to the COVID-19 virus is going to be a realignment with China that's going to leave her seriously weakened. And I don't think that she's going to come out of the Wuhan virus pandemic in the same shape she went into it, not even close. And that might mitigate or forestall radical changes in our beloved Marine Corps. Because you can't give up the mortars and the machine guns, man. That's not right. It's just wrong.
Hey, let me ask you guys something. Have you seen – I mean, I know we go over this and over this. Have there been like hard budgets put to the services, like from SecDef saying you guys will cut this much? I haven't seen anything like that. And then this guy who got fired, Modley, when he was in the Navy, he was an aviator. you know, and I don't know. I don't know if maybe there's dots that we don't know about that need to be connected, you know?
Oh, you're going to go conspiracy theory on us?
Well, oh, with like, aviators? Come on, man. You got.
Yeah, the commandant said, the commandant says, we're doing this and we're going to cut down to 150 something thousand. We're going to get rid of all this valuable stuff. And, you know, there it is. And which will seriously, you know, erode our capabilities, which, you know, even he doesn't disagree with that. But I wonder what's the impetus, because none of these guys, I don't think, would ever do it. I have a new vision for the Marine Corps, and here it is. I don't think so. Even he admits that in the thing Timmy was talking about. This was in the offing before. I'd never heard of anything like this. You know, I mean, was it in the offing with this small group of dudes who worked for General Neller before? What is the – I don't get it, because it seems like nobody saw this thing coming. I mean, you know, we all get apocryphal bits of information from people we know who are still on active duty and everything, and none of them saw this thing coming. That I know.
Well, one person did, and that would be General Krulak, because it mentions in his interview that he had just come from talking with General Krulak, and he'd been talking to him the whole time. So that's for whatever that is worth.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. General Krulak, you know, supposedly was, you know, he was pivoting to the Pacific in the 90s. And
they always want to pivot. I'll tell you what, they always want to do that.
And then something happens. And this is, yeah, exactly. And this is what we're talking about. Be mindful of history and the past conduct of commandants, because what happened was the nation went to war someplace else. And the Marine Corps that had declined to play in CENTCOM is then begging CENTCOM for a role. And then that's where the fight is, in CENTCOM, in spite of somebody else's Harry Potter vision. And so to me, that's the – again, that calls for, as Mark Hansen talked about, the hedge, so that you can go to every climb in place, that you can heavy up. Because, yeah, maybe mortars and machine guns aren't so useful in the South China Sea, where we're going to be rocket security forces. But when we go up to the Korean Peninsula, you can bet your ass that machine guns in that mountainous terrain, machine guns and mortars, you know, are going to be important when you can't get to somebody with a tomahawk on the backside of a fucking hill.
Right. And if you read that article by that guy, Roscoe, he basically says there's no need for any kind of surface amphibious capability anymore, because we've proven the success of the Essex. I had the job of, you know, training the Meuse for 3 years over there in Lejeune. And I'll tell you right now, a ship that has no surface capability is seriously limited. And he references some tasks we still might have, like humanitarian assistance and then supporting special ops and stuff like that. All of which, if you're going to do humanitarian assistance in a big way, you're going to need to land stuff on big numbers of things on the surface, because you're just going to be able to get enough in with the type of aircraft that can fly.
Okay,
off
wait, when you say landed on the surface, explain what you mean.
I mean, I'm talking about lighterage that, you know, landing craft that come from the ship that can carry large numbers of things and people. It can carry tanks. It can carry a bunch of rations. It can carry medical tents that might need when you're talking humanitarian assistance. The idea of just doing everything by air is a non-starter. It just won't work. In Somalia in 1992, when they went in there, you know, they went in there in a big way surface. And the reason was the crisis was such that you couldn't get enough stuff in. Even if you had an airfield, you couldn't get enough stuff in quick enough.
Well, which will make you irrelevant. And then what you'll get told is you got to go secure this airfield so the Air Force can do their shit.
Yeah, and then if there's an enemy involved, they're going to know right where you're coming, because you can't come across any beach that they might have.
So you better have the ass. You better have more than your old pop gun to get after those son of a bitches. So,
and then, exactly.
So, I mean, you can see that, in my opinion, you can see, I don't think in any time you start asking questions, the argument gets made for, right, diversity in terms of, you know, of your skill set. I mean, and that's been the story of the Marine Corps post World War II. And so, to me, to me, it's fantasy land that it's only going to happen like this, and we're all going to go like this. It's not, and so you're writing yourself out of war plans, which makes you irrelevant.
And you know something else, too, that would give me great comfort to see the Commandant say, hey, we're looking at the future. We got to take this shit seriously. We've got to learn to fight underground. Because there's a trend that you're going to see more and more of. Because how do you defeat the high-tech weapons? ISIS figured it out. Japanese figured it out. You go underground. And that's what the Israelis are doing. I'd be dedicating some training areas to fighting inside of caves and shit like that. That's a more realistic assessment of a future capability you're going to need. But we're not even looking at that kind of stuff. We're talking about white vans and Connex boxes. Jesus.
Don't be a hater.
Sorry, man. I get a little depressed. I'm in quarantine, man.
The Black ID's forces use their own women and their own families as moving back the Rangers. That's why it's hundreds and hundreds of deaths. You know, people killed because, these people aren't going to go come at us, in a conventional way. So the idea of this, doing this thing with the ridiculous thing with people foraging and being in places in the South China Sea, this doesn't, what does fit though, is this stuff that appears to be a mass movement, but really the mass movement is nothing but cover for a no-kidding attack on one of our facilities, probably. And that's happened. That's what happened in Benghazi. I mean, and that's what can happen in a lot of places. That's what happened in Pakistan in 1979. The embassy was burned down. Big crowd of people, but a hardcore group of people with guns embedded within that crowd.
What was the reason that when in the days prior to Benghazi, the ARG wasn't in the vicinity?
Because they were spread out all over the place. We had like so many other little missions. Like we had. At the same time, we still had operations ongoing in Afghanistan, and so there's a big force there, the carrier and the big decks were down there operating in the Gulf. Also, you had you actually had part of the MU quartered off to support the Saudis supporting the Houthis with artillery, cross border artillery,
right.
and then you had a couple other things. Then they still did stuff there in the HOA area, right? So you had the every ship was like and it was a big argument within the MUs when I was doing this between new commanders saying, how do we do the command relationships when you got one third of your MU in the Sixth Fleet area, working for UCOM,
right?
And then you got another bunch working for AFRICOM, and then you got another, the preponderance working for CENTCOM, and that's how we fuck ourselves with this, the way the, because they all are very jealous of each other's, authorities and stuff. But that's if the whole MU is off the coast of Benghazi, like in the old days when something happened, here come the ships, and there it is sitting there. And the implication is you got Iwo Jima, you got Normandy on your ass if you keep screwing around. And so a lot of times you don't even have to do anything.
Right. No, that's my point. Is that thing shows up on the horizon, right? And all of a sudden you're seeing flights. What is that? Oh,
Navy is allowing their amphib ships to decrepitize and drop offline one by one. And the National Command Authority sees these things happen and doesn't do it. None of them.
Jeff,
in addition to
Jeff's internet connection sucking, I think he just made up a word. Did he, Timmy?
He might have.
Decrepitize.
Yeah,
am I still on? Because yes, I
decrepitize that. I think you just invented it. Hey, let me tell you, your linguistic gymnastics are like unbe-fucking-leavable.
Like Norm Crosby, yeah. Man. I was looking at myself in a full-length mirror, and I thought, I am decrepitizing at the ratchet rate.
Hey, I'll tell you something about the ship showing up in Beirut when 2-8 was there after they took some casualties.
Right.
I saw the next morning the New Jersey comes gliding on in. And I mean, she came right off the friggin' coast. She was very, very close. Yeah. And all the tourists rotated inland. And I was watching through the big eyes. People were freaking out, running towards the mountains, trying to get away because they didn't know what the hell she was going to do. But when she started unleashing broadsides, everything stopped on shore.
Let me tell you, if I had a chance to see the Iowa do that, and I mean, we were like driving behind it. Webb flew out to the Indian Ocean, got flew onto the Ranger, and the I think it was the Iowa. It might have been the what would it have been at that time?
Yeah,
I think it was the Iowa. It was in front of us, and and it slewed all of its 16-inch guns to the. To the starboard side, and it let it rip. And we were, you know, they had shut down flight operations, and we all got to go up on the carrier deck and on the flight deck. And it was like, holy fuck, man, if it looks like that coming out, what does it look like when it hits? I mean, you see those pictures of that wall of flame that a battleship used. And the other thing about a battleship was that they were low in the water too. They were low in, I mean, they look fucking menacing.
Yeah,
I would have loved to see that.
Showman said with New Jersey shotgun.
Say it again to me.
Yeah, ask the Tin Can Sailors what it feels like to be any other.
Oh, shit.
Now, the Marine Corps said up in Northern I Corps when New Jersey shot for him that everything stopped. They stopped firing. Yeah. The NVA stopped firing. He said it was just – it was awe-inspiring. And whatever problem they had, that problem went away for the time being when New Jersey was around. He said with nothing like it.
Hey, I have one other kind of comment about the Maudley thing. I mean, you know, one of the things I said when you saw the public reaction to, you know, his speech, it's like, I mean, have we become? And I have this thing. I'm much more comfortable with and we've talked about it, a frank discussion of what General Berger is going to do, and let's do it in public and let it rip. And then we'll get over it, and then we'll move on, and hopefully we'll be better for it. And like, Maudley should not have made those comments, okay? And I get that. Somebody else could have, right? But when you saw the reaction publicly to, oh, my God, you know, what he said about too naive or too stupid, right? Well, there was elements of truth to that, right? You know,
absolutely are.
Right, and if we can't – If we can't, and here's what it made me think of. If we can't talk like that anymore, then God help, and you're going to go fight the fucking Chinese, read or listen to The Last Stand of the Tin Can Sailors. And Jeff mentioning that just brought this up in my head. Read what those guys did and had the fight, the damage control fights they fought, while Ernest Evans refought his ship and turned it around like seven different fucking times, right? Mm-hmm. Boiler lines exploding, steam 900 degrees melting human beings. And in the midst of that, you're blocking and shoring and shit like that, doing damage control so your ship can fight. You think if you can't listen to that kind of wire brushing, you're going to go fight the Chinese and you're going to go do that? Good luck, motherfucker.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. There's a lot of stuff that.
I linked it to the 7, 8, or 9 million dollars. You know, you got slick assholes like Don Rumsfeld, slick assholes like Robert McNamara. You've got guys who sit in chairman seats, right, on the Joint Chiefs of Staff, nodding their head, right. You got Pete Pay standing next to Don Rumsfeld like a fucking potted plant, right, and then he gets short toured. Right. And it's like, what are you guys there for? And so I'm much more comfortable and Maudley with all his flaws. At least he went out there and he let it rip on somebody's ass. Right. At least I'm way more comfortable with that than I am with $7 trillion fucking dollars flushed down the toilet. And we will get nothing out of Iraq or Afghanistan at the end of the day. And so,
that's true, but those aren't a choice either or. That's like that's an overall malaise that we got, you know, in regards to our military.
I'm just saying, I'm way more comfortable, right, letting it rip in public with General Berger, and then saying, okay, let's find the truth. I'm much more comfortable hearing somebody do what Maudley did than the chicken shit. I'm concerned most about my career first, and I'm not going to speak out. I just risked the franchise, you know, and the brand I have built over all these years, you know. And so I find that really frustrating about, you know, our modern-day military. And you're going to go fight the Chinese? Really? Is that what you think you're going to fucking do?
Because here this guy does this thing, which basically negates the authority of everybody between him and the captain.
Right, right.
He does that. But then he quits when he gets criticized.
Right.
So, and then we got this thing that seemed to come out of like a whirlwind about really drastic changes to Marine Corps capabilities. And And now this guy's gone. I wonder if something else will happen.
Oh, whoa.
Like there's some kind of, who else would it be? The chief of naval operations? He ain't going to tell General Berger, you must do this. I can't imagine that. It's got to be somebody above them both. Uh-huh. I can't imagine that he was on his own to say, I'm going to make the Marine Corps nothing but the South China Sea gate guards. You know?
Right.
Can't right. see it.
The secret South China Sea gate guards.
Yeah, right. We're in there. What's your name? I'm Charlie Chan. Do you recognize me? Yeah,
with your,
hey, who are you? I'm Mr. Sulu.
With your Groucho Marx mustache and glasses on. Hey, what are you doing? Me?
Yeah.
I'm Hop Sing. Whoa.
Yeah.
You exactly. You look like you're African American. I'm African Chinese. No. Yeah. Okay, Hop Sing. See you later. I mean, come on. But anyway, yeah. Timmy. All right, final thoughts, Timmy. You're muted, bro.
Oh, look at me. I was. Thanks, gentlemen. I must say that I don't think this is going to come to pass. This changes in the Marine Corps.
You don't want
combination because of congressional oversight and the threat from China. Materially changing fundamentally here in the near future, and I think that we're going to see a lot of our manufacturing come home. And I also think we need to get out of this lockdown as fast as we possibly can. And that really consumes. That is everything I'm thinking about in this day today. Boom,
right there. Well, Timmy, tell everybody about the bike you repaired so you can ride to the pull-up bar.
That is good.
Oh, dude, I'm so happy. Yeah, I had a very nice mountain bike I bought used when I was on recruiting duty, as a matter of fact. And that thing has lasted. It took a lot of abuse in Oregon when I was prep. I was going to ride it across the country. Anyway, it's been in storage for a long time because it took a beating. And so I had to get it together, get it out, take the whole thing apart, re-lube everything up. And it's a Landshark. It's a custom-made aluminum-framed old school mountain bike, and it Whoa. Flies. It's got, I think, 20 something gears. So I get out here in this nice flat area, and it's not windy like a Corpus, which made it a pain. But I just go whipping around the city. I'm going to go as soon as we get off here. That's my daily exercise. And I end up at the pull up bars. I do some pull ups, and that's it.
Do you wipe the bar now, before and after?
No.
You don't
I wear gloves. I wear gloves.
Okay.
I wear gloves.
All right, Jeff, final thoughts?
Well, I'm impressed with Tim's bike. I'm going to get a mountain bike myself.
Whoa.
But the gear thing is a problem for me because I'm not smart enough to know to be able to operate more than three gears. So I just want something that'll exercise me. You know what I mean? And I want it to where I don't have to worry about the tires. You know, popping, and then I got to carry the fucking bike back, which is PT in itself. But
right, no, yeah. But cycling is good for infantry people because of all the joint damage over years, right?
Yes, and I got a lot of it. Let me tell you something. You know, I wake up, I'm like, I got pain from my right ear all the way down to my big toe. You know, so it's like, yes, I.
Well, no,
I
mean, we're talking about like normal, just normal wear and tear, and Jeff was blown up, and so that adds to it. That's why cycling is such a good, you know, a good hobby. The other thing you can do is you can buy
swimming.
The other thing you could do is buy a trainer. Like I bought a trainer in my, you can put it in your house, and it applies friction to the back wheel, so you can, you know, you and when you go uphill, you know, and so I mean that's what I do that on a daily basis. I bought my racing bike in 1986, took it on the Ranger for our deployment in 1987. That thing cost me $600. My ex-wife was pissed at me. And now every time she comes over, I show it. I said, hey, there's the bike. I still ride it. Good investment. Good investment. I still have the same fucking bike shoes, too. Right.
Yeah, I do, too. Hey, you know, it sucks. There's a little sissy pull-up bar about a mile away, and I was starting to run. I was going to try to run there and run back. And I can't even do that. And I remember – back when we were in IOC, we must have done this several times a week. Jeff and I would be sitting there because we generally would have off time, and we'd go on boots and utes and run that stupid combat trail. So then we end up talking and laughing the entire time, but that was what, 5 or 6
vomiting.
Miles? And we didn't thought nothing of it. We didn't even change out of our uniforms. Just come back, put on our blouse, and go about our day. I can't imagine doing that now.
Probably not going to happen anytime soon.
No, probably. But you can bike. See, it's the next best thing.
Yeah.
I need to bring a fucking pack. That would take me a couple overnights to do that combat trail.
Yeah, remember doing that? We used to do that routinely. Yeah. Just with nothing else to do.
Yeah.
Come on. Run down the Jody Foster lane.
Exactly.
The yellow brick road. Yeah. The whole $7 trillion thing, and look, watching Afghanistan to me is painful. And the same thing now when I see dollar signs when I look at both of them. And what are we going to get? And then I link that to this whole guys in slick suits, people that won't tell the truth. Right. Yeah. People that won't stand up and object. And then, you know, I see the lack of dissent in the Marine Corps, and it's more this PC bullshit. Right. And we need less PC. We need more frank discussion because, you know, there's 7,000 fucking, you know, men and women that are dead who went and gave the only life they'll ever have for their country because they believed in it.
Yeah.
And I, in my opinion, there ought to be a law enacted, another, you know, constitutional amendment that says if you start a war and you fuck it up, right, you got to go. We won't put you to death, but we're going to put you on Devil's Island. You can't write books and be millionaires. You can't walk around and say shit like, well, it wasn't the concept that was flawed. It was the execution. You don't have that right. You don't have that right. And
that's,
so to
that's
me,
like that guy that, for saying that, you know, alone, he should be in Devil's Island.
Right. And so to me, I just find it problematic. And watching, you know, again, Modley, you know, he's the village idiot of the week, right? I mean, and he's guilty of what he accused Crozier of, right? If you're too stupid or too naive to think that thing wasn't going to be recorded as soon as they said stand by for the Secretary of the Navy, there were cell phones all over that ship that were sitting under speakers, right?
Oh, yeah.
That were recording that shit. So, I mean, what were you thinking about? But again, that frank wire brushing is what we've grown up around. These frank decisions that we have is simply the continuation of what we've been doing since we were captain lieutenants. I saw an article the other day that said the biggest threat to national security is something. The biggest threat to our national security, is our military leaders. I mean, imagine.
It's not that they're taking over; it's just they're not doing anything.
Right.
They're docile.
Right, and so we expand. I mean, imagine we expand the war in Afghanistan again. Mind blowing. Imagine we go to Iraq, and you know, in retrospect, all kinds of guys said, "Yeah, it was bad. It was a terrible idea," and it never passed intellectual mustard relative to the war gaming that we had done, relative to the war planning that we had done. Nothing that Rumsfeld said passed muster. Well, then where the fuck was everybody to say that? Right? Yeah, I mean, they had the opportunity Shinseki, he got shown the door. Why did a whole bunch of generals say, hey, wait a minute, he's right. If you don't do that, we know because we've served in CENTCOM, right? That thing, you're going to have a civil war. And lo and behold, what happened? And, you know, so my point is that I'm much more comfortable with Modley, you know, and the wire brushing, and let's fight about it and let's argue about it. And I linked and I said this the other day, you know, Patton got relieved for slapping two guys in an army hospital who were suffering from battle fatigue, right? Bradley knew he had value. He didn't get shit canned out of the military. He went over and he commanded the inflatables in the lead up to Operation Overlord, and then he was given, you know, the Third Army in Europe.
Yeah, but that wasn't Bradley, Mac, who made that.
I'm Eisenhower.
That
right?
was Marshall. Marshall.
Oh, okay.
Marshall's the one who gave him a shot back.
Our patron, you know, the patron saint of all things lucid, right? George Marshall. So anyway, right? If Patton isn't there, then the series Band of Brothers ends after the fourth episode at Bastogne.
Yeah, that's right. Or even before the breakout. I mean, we might not have broke out of the Normandy thing if Third Army hadn't done that break. You know, Operation Cobra followed up by the huge drive across France. Absolutely,
right.
And then again during Bastogne.
So yeah. I mean, to me, You know, we have to get over this. Everybody's got to be a politician, and they can't say anything bad, right? I mean, I go back to what General Zinni said. The great captains in history rarely had half the qualities that you point to on, you know, your those traits of leadership. They were driven, right? They were smart. They were flawed human beings, but they were good at what we needed, which was making decisions under pressure and fighting. And so, I don't know. We're picking guys that aren't like that.
That we're very lucky about, though,
what?
The three of us. And that is that we were in both places, so we can talk about it with a certain degree of legitimacy. Because could you imagine this going on for 18 years and you didn't get a ticket to the game ever?
That would have been
more than I could handle.
No, I'll tell you what. I know guys who did that. And I'll out myself here. I've had conversations with people, you know, and because I deployed three different times. I'd always had great jobs. I deployed with my friends, and so I got asked once, like, "Well, what does your wife say?" And I said, "About what? And about you going when you talked to her? What did she say?" I said, "I didn't talk to her." And they're like, You didn't talk. I said, well, wait a minute. I get calls from my friends who say, we need you. We could use your help. And what am I going to fucking say? No. My wife said it was a bad idea. I said, how would I ever live with myself? And they're like, whoa. And I'm like, does that make me a bad person?
That's what Lori gets. Lori gets that, or she used to get that from people. How can you let them go back? You know, and because I went five times total, you know,
right.
Twice to Iraq, three times to Afghanistan. She's, you know, she's, are you kidding? Don't you know this guy? I mean, he's a jarhead. That's the jarhead. There's a war. The job is get there and help out. You know,
he's
help
stupid.
Out yeah, well.
Right.
Yeah, that's self-evident.
But like again, I think all of us feel that. I mean, you know, we grew up, you know, our heroes were guys who fought. And, you know, to be in their company. I'll tell you, I went to a thing, it must have been 2006, maybe, after I came back from my deployment with 5th Marines in Fallujah. And my oldest daughter was in middle school. And she said, will you come to our Veterans Day thing? And I said, sure. And she says, it's going to be kind of hokey, but I'd like for you to come. I said, I'll come. So I go. And, you know, if you're a veteran, you know, you sit over here. And then they had this program. And then they said, would the veterans of, would all the veterans stand up? Now we'd like to recognize the veterans who fought in our wars, with World War II veterans. And there was a few there. And it was the first day I'd ever got to stand up like that anywhere in my life. But, right? I mean, and you guys know, I mean, all of a sudden you're with them. Right?
Yeah.
Those guys who you looked up to so much, and now you get to stand up with them. You know, and for me, yeah. I mean, I came home that night. I went back to work, and she came home, and she said, so what'd you think? Like, it was, like, too hokey or something. I said, it was one of the best days of my life. And she looked at me.
Good for you.
She looked at me, and she said, are you serious?
Yeah.
And I said, do I look like I'm joking? And she said, no. I said, Catherine, my whole life, I've looked up to them. Mm-hmm. And today I got to stand up with them. And to be included amongst them. And
yep.
So, I hope in that context people could understand. I didn't ask my wife to be disrespectful. I did it because there's no way I would have been able to live with myself and sit there every day and watch the news and see news of them and know that I said no.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that. So, and that's where I think I hope people understand the passion that we have.
It is. There's a lot of people who do.
Right? Well, I mean, I've met a couple. And they hate themselves,
yeah.
You know, and it's like a really struggle that I didn't go, you know.
Oh,
and what do you say?
Yeah.
What do you say? And so, but again, I think there's it's so important that we get over this PC shit, and that you know, I know this you know this guy in my neighborhood. He's a Vietnam, he's a Vietnam veteran, A-4 pilot, United States Navy, and awesome guy. But he hates Donald Trump. And he's telling me, you know, what a piece of shit Trump is. Somebody just sent me a picture of the New Jersey firing off Lebanon. It's awesome.
Oh, no shit.
I'll send it to you. I'll send it to you. It's awesome. But cool. Wait a minute. What was I saying? I did. I pulled a Kenny.
About this guy who's a A4 guy who doesn't like Trump.
So he's me, he's telling me what a piece of shit Donald Trump is. And I said, but he didn't start a war that should have been fought like LBJ and JFK, did he? And he just looked at me. I said, or like Bush, or double down on the stupidity like Obama. Right? He didn't do that. And you're a Vietnam veteran, and you want to say that, you know, I said, man, you need to, like, do a little bit of reading, okay? And the fact that you don't like his style and his personality, I've completely rethought what it is to be a good president. I don't give a shit about your style or your personality. Will you fight for American jobs? Will you fight for American interests? And will you fight for it, not just go be PC, you know, and be a weak-ass motherfucker around the rest of the world? Will you fight for this country? And I don't care who you had sex with. I don't care about any of that shit, right? So my criteria for what it is to be a good president, you know, has changed because we've had too many lame-ass shitheads. $7 trillion, man. I still can't. Yeah. It blows me away. So,
I agree 100%.
Yeah. That doesn't happen very often, just for the record, everybody knows. Anyway. All right, boys, I appreciate the discussion today, and good luck to the Navy, man. I mean, the United States, we need a strong Navy, but, man, they cannot, whether it's the Gallagher shit, whether it's the, you know, the Seventh Fleet and ships running into each other, not being able to court-martial people, you know, whether it's the investigation in the SJA and the NCIS. I mean, the Navy doesn't seem to be able to do a whole lot right these days, and I don't know. Maybe they need to do a little introspective core value shit and get back to being, you know, tin can sailors, because those guys were able to stand up to some pretty brutal fighting. So anyway.
Mm-hmm.
All right, boys. Have a good one.
All right. Bro. See you.
Take care.
Hurrah. We got Jeff to give us a new hurrah. That's awesome. There you have it. So, in addition to all those linguistics that Kenny gives you, he gave you the sign off, hoorah. That's awesome. But anyhow, let me read you an email before we head out the door. You guys are fucking hilarious. I'm sitting here in my office laughing. Kenny's mastery or whatever of the English language. And now that I think about it, Mac, it's a combination of mastery and butchery that happens instantaneously that's wonderfully entertaining, or at least laughable. The question I have is, do you think that the explosion caused that? No, I'll tell you for a fact. He's always been like that. He, like, 90-degree turn or more acute angle. You know, maybe 120 degrees, Kenny can do it on a dime, which is what I love about my friends. Timmy can do it too. You're talking about one thing, and then all of a sudden the car goes, and all of a sudden you're talking about something else. You're like, what just happened? Right? And then he goes on. He says, I just want to tell you, I laugh my ass off during this segment, and I also learn a lot. But the one thing that comes through, and the reason I'm writing this email, is your collective passion for the country, for the Marine Corps, and for the things you believe in. I also really have learned a lot about what it is to fight in public and to be a grown-up about it, not take it personally, and make things better. I do believe that it's problematic, the lack of debate I've seen about the Burger Plan. I wish that would change. So, first of all, thank you. And I like that. Mastery and butchery. We should make bastery. That's a combination of mastery and butchery. So anyway, the Kenny approach to the English language, which is pretty funny. All right, that'll do it. If you're just tuning in, I had a conversation with a young Marine yesterday by the name of Matt Kiker. Last night, I was getting ready to go to bed, saw that he was online. I called him, and I met Matt over a year ago at Camp Lejeune, and he's had a lot of tragedy and death in his life. And so I called him just to say hi, and turns out he had another member, his aunt passed away yesterday. And, you know, it was an awesome conversation because Matt knows the path of post-traumatic winning. And you could hear it in his voice. You could hear it in his voice that, you know, while this was a terrible day for his family, that he knew where this was going, right? He knew where it was going, and he was, you know, he was good with it. And that he knew the path, and you could hear the confidence in his voice, and you could hear that he knew that he was going to help his family. He knew how he was going to help people in his family, and he was ready to do that. Now, that kid, you know, 15 months ago, he was a shit show, alcoholic, you know, and struggling with the traumatic things that had happened to him in his life, a lot of suicide, murder in his life. And so you're gonna hear me talk about that a little bit in the first hour, and then we check some news headlines. So more than ever, don't be afraid to change somebody's life. If you haven't checked out Post-Traumatic Winning, please do, because, you know, the changes that I see in people, I mean, you know, this week, three different times, you know, I've been touched by it, by work that I've done in the past as it comes back to me, by people who've reached out to me for advice on how to help somebody. And post-traumatic winning is legit. And what I think that for people that are struggling, there's incredible appeal to, hey, we need you to get full up round again, and then we need you to help us help other people. And for Marines, that's intoxicating. That is, you know, maybe you won't do it for yourself, but you'll do it for somebody else. And it's just, and what I've seen in the last, you know, 16 months is honestly, it's absolutely, I mean, it's like miracles. It's watching miracles happen all the time. And it's watching, I mean, Matt Kuiker says it. It's watching people turn trauma into joy. And I love it because it all comes from this radio program. It all comes from the veterans I've had, the Marines I've had on this program, their spouses, their families, and the truth that you have to be willing to confront. And if you'll learn from the truth that is embodied in those three goals and 10 commandments, you can fundamentally transform your life, and you can transform other people's lives. So I'll leave you with that today. If you haven't checked it out, check it out, and then go change somebody's life and watch what happens to yours. So have a great day. Allmarine Radio on a Thursday, over and out. Live the high life, man, and go help somebody live it too. It's what we owe the people who died as we wasted $7 trillion around the world. It's what we owe them. So let's get after that shit. Out.